Blog Talk Radio.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? I didn't care for you. We would zigzag our way through the bottom of pain, occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the foe is to blame. And watching the pigs on the wing.
Good evening and welcome to American Conservative Party Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're here watching pigs fly.
Boy. Man, I just, right over the hill there.
You know, that opening song covers so many bases, I just can't even imagine.
I know. We're gonna
spend the first half hour just dissecting the current situation politically, economically, based on that 45 seconds worth of song.
There you go. You betcha.
By the way, it's windy as hell outside.
Really?
It's 43 degrees, 44 degrees. It's windy. It's wet. Yeah.
Are you trying to tell me? Are you trying to tell me you didn't get to play golf?
Yeah. I didn't even get a chance to cut my grass.
Dang, I am really sorry about that, Tracy, because I'm 66.2 degrees outside on my front porch. Dead calm, and it got up to 71 today. Sorry. Oops.
My mom was dead. If I can't say anything nice,
yeah.
I can't say anything at all.
Well, you could say, gosh, I'm glad you had a really nice day out there, Bill.
Oh, that's not what I want to say.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, so let's talk about the thing that, okay, we have been saying, you and I have been saying, a lot of people on our side of the aisle have been saying, that Barack Obama is in way over his head, that he's an unskilled, incompetent boob.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are taking what happened last, was it on Friday or was it on Thursday?
Which?
The Olympics.
Oh, the Olympics. Thursday? Thursday and Friday.
I think it's Friday. Was it Friday? Was it
yeah, Friday. Friday is when it all came down.
I'll explain why I'm having some problems with time at this particular point.
Okay.
shortly. There was a couple of things. One, word was that the Olympic Committee told Obama that if he didn't come, it would be bad for Chicago. So he should have come. Everybody would have given him 9 miles of crap if that had come out and he had not gone and Chicago had not gotten the Olympics.
Yeah, probably.
So, should Barack Obama have gone to Copenhagen to try and get the Olympics for Chicago?
No.
My answer is no. For a couple reasons, not the least of which, I don't know if anybody else has ever done it before.
I certainly don't recall.
I would not be surprised if a governor or the city mayor.
Oh, sure.
Right,
sure.
I'm certain they would go.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know that a president has gone to the Olympic Committee at this
I don't recall
time.
One.
I don't know, so I can't say whether one way or the other, but I don't think so. And you're the president of the whole United States, and yes, it is coming to one city, one state, but it is for the country. There's no doubt about it that the whole country gets on board with the Olympics, even if it's a city or state that's bearing most of the brunt of the costs and otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's my problem, and it's a problem a lot of other people had. I assumed that when Barack Obama went, it was a slam dunk.
Yeah, yeah. His showing up would seal the deal, and he could reap the kudos there.
Right. I assumed that he had been told, this is a slam dunk, it's a great photo op, it's going to be wonderful for the country, it's good for Chicago, it's going to be good for your political capital, it's going to be all kinds of good, everything's been worked out, we're all set, it's good.
Actually, there is some talk that Valerie Jarrett, in fact, said that.
Well, I'll wait for her to be thrown under the bus if that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so assuming that that was, in fact, the case, one of two things happened. Obama was lied to in the case of maybe Ms. Jarrett. Or the IOC wanted to bitch slap him in the worst way. Because they didn't really care that Barack Obama is the president. It was simply the president of the United States, and they didn't care who it was they wanted to do it to it. Which puts lie to two different things, either which way it goes. One, that he is competent and knows what the hell he's doing, and he's surrounded himself by competent people. So that would put lie to that. Or that the world just loves the fact that we've got Barack Obama as president, and everything is going to be kumbaya with us now.
Pardon me if I don't sign on to that ladder.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody with half a brain signed on to that ladder even last year.
No. Actually, that kind of fits in with a thought that I've been having lately. And that is this.
Has it been a recurring thought?
Actually, it has. I've been thinking about this for, maybe the last 4 or 5 days. And we all say, not maybe all of us, but a large group of people say, Barack Obama is this really smart guy, and all that kind of stuff, and he has a plan, and I keep looking at what's going on, and I'm saying, folks, I don't think he has a plan. I think he has goals, but I don't think he has a plan on how to get there. I mean, it's great to have goals. I mean, I could have a goal to be able to slam dunk a basketball on a regulation basket, right? But unless I get off my butt and start working out every day, I'm never going to get more than 6 inches off the floor, because everybody knows white guys can't jump, right? So, he's got goals. He doesn't have a plan. He doesn't know how he's going to get to those goals. And that's why you see all of this crap being thrown up against the wall just to see what'll stick.
Well, see, I would sit there and say, you and I, we discussed goals in the past, but that's why I would suggest, in fact, he doesn't have goals other than this, than exactly what he did last year, which was to suggest, we're going to have wonderful relationships with everybody because I'm going to go and meet with them without preconditions, and I'm not going to be a cowboy. Well, what does it mean you're going to have good relationships with people? What is the purpose of having a good relationship with, Hugo Chavez? What is the purpose of having a good relationship with, I'm a dinner jacket?
Yeah, really.
if the goal is to have good relationships, the question would be, why? And why with them?
Yeah.
There has to be something more. But that's all he. I think that's all he has.
But
I
see, I you and I may differ here, but I don't think that any of his goals have to do anything with foreign policy. I think he said that because foreign policy was obviously a big deal during the campaign. But I don't think any of his goals have anything at all whatsoever to do with foreign policy. I think it's all domestic. I think his goal is to increase the size of the statist government. It is to bring more and more of the economy under the control of the government, very much in the way that FDR did it. I mean, you can hear him talk about the Second Bill of Rights. You hear and the people that surround him talk about that. You hear him talk about social justice. You hear him talk about all of these things that have been this pent-up desire ever since FDR, ever since LBJ, and now Obama. His goal is to increase the size of government to control the society. He doesn't have a plan on how to get to that.
Right. I can imagine him on November 4th last year, the evening thereof, going, you know, after it was clear he was going to win, going, now we're going to be able to do make this country so that it does things the way we want it to.
Fundamentally transform were his words, yes.
Okay. Here's the thing, okay? I take him at his word.
Sure.
But it's like me telling you, we are going to fundamentally change my car from a gas-guzzling, you know, carbon-spewing, steam-using, you know, hydrogen fuel cell-powered, you know, clean machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and you and I, on tomorrow, with an unlimited source of money and an unlimited source of power, are going to walk out, look at my car, open the hood, and look at it and go, what's first?
Very good. I like that.
You know,
we had this goal, but we didn't have a plan on how to get there.
It's not, even if we had a plan, what we want to do requires the wholesale destruction of my car
yep.
to get there.
Yes, it does.
What
you
am I supposed to do in the meantime? What?
Oh, well, there's always public transportation.
So that's my problem is I understand I'm going to take his word that what he wants to do is fundamentally change it. But what he wants to do it is the equivalent of saying, okay, we're going to destroy, maybe this is exactly what it is, we're going to destroy the United States of America so we can rebuild it in our image. Okay, well, that took 200 years to do the first time. You know, it's not going to happen in 4 years. It won't happen in 8. You know, it may not be able to happen in, well, over the next 15 days, we may get along much closer to it, economically and financially.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way,
yes,
there was a YouTube of a woman that said that she wasn't going to make any more payments on her credit card, till her credit card company came to the table and worked with her on changes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it went viral. It was all kinds of things. Got on the news. Well, of course, as soon as it went viral and got on the news, what happened was that, you know, JP Morgan Chase called her up and said, yeah, hey, we're going to cut your interest rate to 9%. You know, and everybody, she's all kinds of, like, really happy because she's only paying 9% on her money.
Really?
And I'm sitting here like going, all right, you and I have been talking about the coming apocalypse with regards to the economy.
Hey, you know, there was another card played on that one today.
No, what?
Oh, you didn't hear.
I've been a couple of
instances of the same news item that Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, France.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, are looking to dump the dollar as a reserve currency and price oil in a basket of currencies consisting of the euro, the French, whatever they use, the Swedish krona, the Chinese yuan, and Japanese yen and the Russian ruble.
Well, okay. I'm going to put this down. Let's talk
okay.
about dollar
yeah,
basket
yeah.
because it's something I do want to talk about kind of a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Meantime, somebody's got their hand raised and really is kind of going, you know, horse hat.
Call on me.
So, we have a caller from Kentucky.
Cool.
Caller, who's calling us? Say your name and where you're calling from. Come on, speak up.
It's okay, we don't bite.
I'm calling from a 520 number. Is that who you're asking?
Yes, that is. Oh, I said 502, didn't I? I didn't say 502.
Yeah, this is not Kentucky. This is Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, welcome to Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, they're right next door to each other, aren't they?
Yeah. Listen, I just won't take one minute. I think I have something that you may have not heard. It's my understanding that today a federal judge by the name of David Carter in Santa Ana, California, has ruled in favor of a lawyer, Dr. Orley, O-R-L-Y, T-A-I-T-Z, that the lawyers for Barack Obama must present to the court January 2010 proof that he is a U.S. citizen and other documents under the legal term discovery.
I saw that. Actually, I saw that news article. A small correction. He didn't say that they had to present documents. What he said was that there would be a trial on that issue.
Yeah.
Now,
when you talk about a trial, sir, that opens the door to discovery, so they will have to present documents. But anyway, you can check it out. It's all over the Internet. It's all over the news, a lot of conservative news places as well. So I just thought I'd call in and give you that information. Thank you.
We thank you very much. Tracy, you there?
My mom always said.
Yeah? Okay.
Moving right along, where were we?
Economics.
Economics, dollar.
Yeah.
Apocalypse.
Yes.
And the lady with her credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are moving next June.
Cool.
We're moving to San Diego.
Cool.
Warmer weather. Make it easier on Victoria.
Yep.
Here's the deal. We have a house here in Madison.
Okay.
Yesterday we had our second showing at the house.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was informed of it on Friday that it was going to happen. Now, we had a showing a couple weeks ago, and the people that looked at it said, that it was overpriced. We had to reduce our price by 24%.
Oh, my goodness.
And that it had taken, given the fact that it was only 7 years old, it had taken a little bit of a beating. We need to paint the place. No bout about it.
Oh, boy.
So Victoria was very concerned by that appraisal of the house. And so it fell upon me to improve the spiffiness of the house this weekend.
Okay.
Now, one of the things I didn't do was paint.
At 7 years, no, I wouldn't think so.
So, I wasn't going to paint, but I was going to make things a little bit more spiffy, so I kind of worked kind of hard this weekend. But what I didn't do was I didn't cut the grass.
Nope.
Which needs it. But, you know, I decided it was going to be very nice, very clean, very well organized, and not cluttered at all inside. So I spent most of the weekend between petitions and other things dealing with getting the house ready. That's why I've been kind of there. I did not watch the Packer-Viking game. Didn't even have it on the radio last night.
Oh, my gosh.
What didn't I do? I did do a fair amount of tweeting, and I did do a fair amount of online stuff over the weekend in between things. Because we're planning on moving, and the odds are we're not going to sell this house at anywhere near. Now, a 24% reduction in the price means that we would be underwater. We had 25%, you know, equity at one point. I would suggest to you, based on that number, we're underwater by about 10 or 12%.
Ouch.
So, here's the choice. You know, we're not going to be able to rent this house for what we normally spend to maintain this house. The cost of it is simply too high market-wise. Especially given the fact that everybody and their brother-in-law is trying to rent damn near anything they can get, and they got condos coming out of their yin-yang around here looking for people to rent. Rent rates are going down, and although it's, you know, the other side of the problem is that we have a 5-bedroom house on a 1/4 acre with a big office and 3 bathrooms, you know, it's a big place. You actually be able to rent it to 2 families, and you might be able to get closer to the right money to it.
Gotcha.
So we're not going to be able to rent it, and even if we were able to rent it, we'd be running negatives pretty heavy, you know, beyond that. So what's our choice? If we can't sell it and we can't rent it, got to either stay or walk away.
Yeah.
Now, this is a purely business situation. If, in fact, we're going to be walking away because we can't sell it, why are we paying the mortgage?
And that's an economic decision.
It's an economic decision. So, you and I have been talking about coming. Let's talk about our little wager going. By the way, you lost.
Oh, I see. We both lost.
No.
What?
I said November that the October number would be over 10, and it would be reported in November. You said it was the September reported in October.
And it is.
And it's not. It's not over 10%. Here it is, October, reporting in September. Well, that's correct. That's the whole point that I wanted to bring to.
Oh, good.
Okay. BLS, the people that give us our unemployment numbers, have been reporting what's called, you know, basic unemployment, U1 numbers, for the last year. But the media used to report the U6 number whenever it came up for George Bush. The U6 number includes all the discouraged and other people that would like to be working full-time but are only working part-time, who have not looked for a job in the last 4 weeks because they're discouraged, people that have fallen off of the unemployment rolls because they've been on it for more than a year. That U6 number includes all of those people, and that number is about 17%.
Yep.
Well, that was the number that the media always reported during George Bush's first term. During his term. They very seldom reported the actual unemployment number. They reported the U6 number. For Barack Obama, of course, now they're not going to say anything about the U6 number because it's a nightmare.
Oh, yes, it is. It has these connotations of Great Depression to them.
Yes, it does. Now, the BLS has been charged with reporting those unemployment figures, and one of the problems it had was that over the years, people would lose their jobs, and instead of going out and getting another job, they'd start a business.
Yes.
Now, that's a very good thing. That's a very positive thing we wanted to do, and that the BLS wanted to capture that set of circumstances And so they created what's called the birth-death model. Now, this has nothing to do with people living and dying.
It has to do with businesses, right?
It has to do with businesses. That when unemployment starts to inch up, people losing their jobs have a tendency to start businesses. So the model was designed to try and capture that. Well, all during the last 18 months, that birth-death model has been adding anywhere from 50 to 200,000 new businesses a month.
In what time frame again?
The last 18 months.
Wow.
Now, the problem with that is, of course, there's no way in hell that number of people have been starting businesses.
No.
And a lot of them have been doing, the places where it says it's been building businesses just doesn't make sense. During the last half of last year, October, November, December, they're adding 30 to 50,000 new construction, mortgage, and financial services jobs. Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
The financial services, the mortgage companies were imploding like crazy. There was no way people were starting business in those environments. Everybody has learned that that birth-death model is just gone nuts. Well, they realized that there's some inconsistencies with their numbers. And
yeah.
So once a year in January, they recalculate.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Inconsistencies is another way of saying you lie.
Let's just say that their data capturing systems have a tendency to bias the numbers.
I see. Okay, fine.
They understand there are some inconsistencies, and so in January, they make an adjustment that will be announced in February as to what they think is the correct birth, death result for the year.
Hmm.
And here in October, they do a preliminary assessment.
Aha!
And here's what the preliminary assessment was for the first 6 months of 2009.
Okay.
The birth-death model added 825,000 jobs that, in fact, don't exist.
Oh, boy.
Which means there's 825,000 people unemployed, more unemployed, than what has been reported.
Hmm.
That works out to be, roughly speaking, about a half a percentage point. It's about 0.56%. Once I did some calculations and rough numbers, and that's kind of where it looks like it is. That would increase the unemployment figure by about 0.56, which means that instead of the current 9.4, we are in fact much closer to 10.4%.
Yes, indeed.
And because that number jumped from 9.4, it means that we went over 10%. July, we went down to 9.9 in August, but we're back over 10 here in September.
Yep.
Now, so I shall concede to William that you are most close to be accurate, because even though neither one of us were right, you had the earlier date, and it appears that's exactly what happened.
Well, let me drop just another little thing on you. We have often talked about residential real estate and what's happened to that market. And somebody I know on Twitter says, you know, if you counted all of the real estate agents that can't make sales because of the market. You know, you've got a whole lot of people out there that because they can't collect unemployment, aren't counted, and so therefore the unemployment rate is even higher than it would be. But none of us really much talk about the commercial real estate. And you know what, folks? That's going in the tank here in California, at least as far as hotels and motels are concerned, because we've got a quadrupling of foreclosures in just the Dana Point area in hotels and motels. We have loans secured by more than 1,500 hotels in the state of California with an outstanding balance of $24.5 billion, that's with a B, that are in danger of default.
Well, now that's good news for me in Victoria.
Oh, absolutely. It's great news for you in Victoria.
Because
for the rest of us, not so much.
You've been talking about years about buying, you know, a little motel and having it in a nice place.
Okay, there you go. Now would be the time. I didn't see anything on the map that was right down there in San Diego. I do see, well, actually I do. Yeah, San Diego's on the map there. They've got a little red dot on it.
Do they have something up near Ojai?
Oh, Ojai. Remember where Ojai is.
North Santa Barbara. Make
well,
the turn.
Right in Santa Barbara, we got some.
Huh. The Victoria reminded me that we talked about Ojai too. As a place to go. So our point is about all this upcoming apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
That if in fact bad things are going to happen, we're going to start hearing about it over the next 10 days.
Yep.
Earnings season will begin on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
For
yes, it will.
For those of you that don't know what earnings season is, every quarter companies report how they did the previous quarter.
Yes, they do.
And that always starts with Alcoa on Monday.
Yeah.
And
good old Alcoa.
It goes from there.
Yes, it does.
So, and the expectation is that, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of bloodiness going on, and everyone expects a certain amount of that. But they're also expecting that the gross national product actually went up in the third quarter. And if it did not, then the thought is that people are going to realize that it's a lot worse than they expected. And after a couple $1 trillion, yes, a couple $1 trillion being spent by the government and by the Fed over the last 6 months, that if we couldn't have gotten GDP into the green zone with that, there's nothing else we can do. And, of course, going into the holidays with all these people unemployed, there's no way in hell we're going to have a good Christmas season.
Nope.
And they're already talking about a negative Christmas season. And boy, I think that is one of those we warned about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
That if they begin spinning things to try and, you know, take the pressure off of GDP, then they know it's going to be bad.
Yep, absolutely.
And for them to come out and say, you know, retail sales over the holidays is expected to be negative this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may be a suggestion. I also think, and let's talk about this dollar thing and the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been talking about this for quite some time.
Yeah.
This is about the third or fourth time that this quote-unquote rumor has popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last times they talked about it was, in fact, in the spring of 08.
Yes.
Dollar was extremely weak. Our balance trade was pretty high. Gas prices were going through the roof. Lots of dollars were being changed. China was saying there's all kinds of problems. And they really, really wanted to change things right up until August when things started falling apart, and where did everybody dump their
their whatevers? Yeah,
right back into the dollar.
Absolutely.
The currency of last resort, the currency of the safe currency. So, while I think they can certainly make, you know, that statement, I think it is in fact a whole lot of hooey, only because, and I read this morning, and I actually pretty much agree with it. Bill, if I wanted to send you $100 today, I might have a little bit of trouble doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You might get it tomorrow or
mm-hmm.
the next day, but we could probably work it out if we do a lot of hemming and hawing.
Yep.
But if the Fed wanted to send the European Central Bank $1 billion, they could do it in about 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, most countries and major corporations can exchange currencies and exchange monies almost as fast as it can be keyed in and the receipt show up on somebody else's computer.
Yep, absolutely. Electronic trading.
Oh,
you betcha.
So the question becomes, why would anybody worry about what currency oil sales are occurring in when 5 seconds after you have a $100 million sale in dollars, you can convert it to yen and transfer it to Japan in the same motion?
Yes, you could.
The question is, what difference does it make what currency it's in? Because we just chop and change hundreds of billions of dollars worth of transactions every day without even thinking about it. In and out of different currencies, in and out of different countries, in and out of different corporations.
When you talk about the exchange rates, that's an absolutely true statement. When you are talking about contracts with 30-day forward deliveries based on the U.S. dollar, that then becomes problematical. Because at this point, you don't know what the U.S. dollar is going to be worth.
Ah, but here's the kind of interesting thing, because that was kind of raised in that story.
Mm-hmm.
Not specifically the way you did. But one of the reasons things are, you know, I'm not going to get into the big details of what carry trade is.
Right, yeah.
But for the last 20 years, the currency of choice for carry trades was the yen.
Yep.
For two reasons. One, it was relatively stable.
Yep.
It was relatively stable at an extremely low value.
Yes.
In relationship to everything else.
Yes.
Well, the question is, the dollar has a bottom. We may not know exactly where it is, but it certainly has a bottom. And if we're pretty close to that now, and some people think we are, we're likely to be pretty stable here for a long period of time. But doesn't that make us the more realistic carry trade? And in fact, for the last quarter, that's what's happening. Dollars are being used more and more as, you know, the carry trade. Well, if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of hot money flows into the United States on that basis. Anyways, I've given up considering where the dollar is going to go because I think there's too much speculation and too much what did Greenspan say? Irrational,
you know,
exuberance.
Yes. Yeah.
the markets are going. You know, are just. You know, the S&P is priced at $80 a share. You know, we're actually running at about, you know, earnings at $80 a share. We're running around 15. Forward looking, we're maybe at about 20. 80 is just way the hell overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
The Dow's not any better. You know, I'm sitting here looking at it going, let me see. Unemployment is going up over 10%.
Yep.
We have deflation going on everywhere. Commodities are crashing. You know, production utilization is falling through the floor. And the stock market is getting ready to break 10,000 again.
Yeah, really. Excuse
okay.
me?
Somebody's smoking stuff that I want to know what it is.
Yeah,
I'm
indeed.
I'm interested in it, but you've got to be thinking, what the hell are they thinking?
Yeah, you do have to be thinking that. Here's my scenario, and that is that we get a double dip recession or depression, however you want to term it, doesn't affect what I'm talking about. You have the traditional commodities of gold hitting big highs. You have the dollar declining against almost every other major currency. You have oil at, closed at $71 a barrel today, 71 and change, I think. And I'm saying, and we are monetizing our debt. And in my mind, the only place that leads is either inflation or hyperinflation. One of those two things.
Well,
it was interesting to me that Australia raised their cash carry rate, which is analogous to our prime rate, by a quarter of a point. Now that's a big move for them. Big move.
Yeah, but they're also a commodity producer.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
Okay, here's what I have to say about it.
Okay.
I have been convinced. I'm a big Milton Friedman fan. I've been a proponent of supply-side economics since basically it came out before then, because it makes economic perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Monetary theory is, in fact, a very rational approach to economic theory. But I also acknowledge one of the things that I made an argument about way back in the late 80s was the creation of an alternate currency system. And by alternate currency system, it's called securitization. And my dear, dear friend Michael Milken is the one that is credited with the building of that process, in which he created junk bonds that could be traded like stocks, and it opened up an entirely new avenue that eventually, over 20 years, became CDOs, CMAs, and derivatives,
mm-hmm.
and a whole host of financial instruments that seriously caused a major financial meltdown last year and still sits as a major hangover to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that second currency situation, monetary theory becomes hard to understand. Unless you understand that debt is a second currency, credit is a second currency, and we've destroyed a significant quantity of it.
Mm, yes, we have.
And despite the fact that we've printed an enormous amount of money,
yes, we
an
have.
Unprecedented, enormously large amount of money, and that we monetized so much debt as to be just... Any monetary theorist is going to look at you and go, not only are we going to have inflation, not only are we going to have hyperinflation, we are in really, really serious danger of, 10,000% inflationary rates, in this country based on the numbers there.
Yep.
If you ignore credit creation as a second monetary source. And because his point is that having that second source and the amount of destruction that's in there, that the currency, the money that has been created, is so far dwarfed by how much credit we've actually destroyed in the last 18 months, that we're not risking any hyperinflation at all. that in fact we're still dealing with a significant problem of deflation. And there is considerable evidence that that is in fact the case. Now, I agree, I think you agree, that if the banks get the idea that all is well and they're going to be protected forever by the government, and let me tell you, they are certainly getting that idea right now.
Mm-hmm.
Once they decide that the bottom is actually in, they're going to take that cash and start lending it. And nobody has stopped them from doing, you know, 20 times, 30 times, 40 times leveraging. And that unprecedented amount of cash could quickly produce an unbelievable amount of credit. And then you're absolutely right. We have hyperinflation.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bernanke is hoping that that's going to happen.
You think he's looking for hyperinflation?
Yeah. It's the only thing. It's the only thing that pulls his buddy's cojones out of the fire.
I see. Okay, so you hyperinflate the debt away.
Yeah, because I think they're still sitting on 50 or 60 trillion worth of notational value debt that needs to be written off at the rate of somewhere in the vicinity of 10 or 11 trillion dollars worth of losses. And there's no way. That's just people. We, you and me and everybody on the left or on the right has been talking about the fact that, you know, we are writing a debt check that our children cannot pay. You know,
right.
We cannot pay this debt.
That's right.
We can't. We have simply written a check that we cannot pay.
Yep.
That is national insolvency. And there's only one way out of that, short of national bankruptcy, and that's to inflate the hell out of it. And I'm thinking that that's exactly what they're hoping. And I think everybody understands in the back of their heads and in places where they don't talk out loud near the press, that's what's going to happen. And the risk is, sometime in the next 10 days, the cat's going to be out of the bag. Because if we don't have a double dip, if we actually show a negative GDP, then I
mm-hmm.
think everybody is going to go, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And when everybody goes, oh, shit, there will be no bottom.
Yep.
There's a phrase in stock market analysis and financial markets and stuff like that, it's called a dead cat bounce.
Yep. Yep.
And that's exactly what we're facing if that happens, is a significant dead cat bounce. And if
yep.
you want to know what it is, think about it this way. You know, drop a cat off a 100-story building, and let me tell you, I don't care if it lands on its feet or not, you know, it's going to bounce.
Yep.
And it's going to be dead when it hits.
Yep.
That's our economy. It may land down its feet, but it's going to be dead when it hits.
Well, I guess. Go ahead.
And then, of course, I'm looking at my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, do I really want to give $2,500 to the banks?
Nope.
Or do I want to put $2,500 in my mattress?
Yep. Or gold.
You know, the problem with that is somebody else has to hold my gold.
No, you can take the direct delivery.
Not going to happen.
Well, I know, but you can. I mean, it's possible.
So the question is, all of this has gone into my head over the last couple days. You know, does it make economic sense to be paying the mortgage at this point? Here's the problem for our economy. I think there's a whole shitload of people just like me
mm-hmm.
that are asking the same thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, it is going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
If there's a lot of people like me that decide, you know, things are going to go to hell in a handbasket really, really fast, and the last thing I want to be doing is going to be making my life, you know, more miserable for the benefit of the bank.
Exactly.
Not going to do it.
Nope. Well, you know, and that really brings up that the whole dichotomy of inflating the national debt away. And that is this. It is great for the government. It gets to pay off its current debt with highly inflated dollars. That's a good thing for the government.
Yep.
It is a terrible thing for you and me.
And everybody else.
Absolutely. Horrible thing. And so therefore, what you have is you have one entity whose most rational economic decision is to inflate the currency so it can pay off its debt, pitted against another entity that says, wait a minute, I don't want to pay $100 for a loaf of bread. I can't afford to pay $100 for a loaf of bread. Can't do it. And that's just inflation. That's not hyperinflation, folks. Hyperinflation is where you take a wheelbarrow full of currency to go buy that loaf of bread. And yes, that has happened. This is not like an unheard of thing. This is not.
It doesn't have to be Banana Republic to be it, to do it.
No, it doesn't. Look at, the classic example is Germany between the First and the Second World War. That's the classic example, folks.
Debt destroyed that economy in such a horrifying way.
Oh, man.
Well, this is my situation. This is where I'm looking at, like, you know, the money's in the bank right now to pay the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to pull the trigger.
Yep.
You know, and by bank, I mean the local credit union. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't trust the banks at all. it's there. I'm not going to pull the trigger. I may not pull the trigger. I may be willing to pay my $100 late fee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and wait till the 28th or the 29th of this month before I pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
But if things snap in the next week or two, you know, we're going to hunker down for the winter.
Yep.
Now, I have an advantage. Foreclosure in this state will take over a year.
Ah, okay.
If I don't pay in October, the banks will not even move against me before the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they do, they won't be able to close the deal before this time next year.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That gives me a lot of time to put money to the side.
Yeah.
And if the economy is going to get substantially worse over the next 3 months, and there is no way in hell it's not.
I agree.
People have been talking about housing being more stable. Unfortunately, housing as a general rule in June, July, and August tends to be the highest months.
Mm-hmm.
Prices increase, sales increase, simply because that's the time people do it.
Right. Exactly.
But September, October, November, December, sales are going to go down. The $8,000 tax credit will be all but over in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you have to close before the 30th of November.
Right.
You know, and average short closings are 30 days. So if you haven't got a house in progress to be sold, you know, by the end of this month.
You aren't getting there. Right.
You're not going to get there.
Yep.
Although on this house, we closed in 23 days.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
From the day we wrote the offer to the time we walked in the door, it was 23 days.
Wow, that's quick.
But this was an empty house. It was a brand new house.
Got it. Yeah, okay.
You know,
And it didn't require another sale and all that kind of stuff.
Didn't require another sale. We were first-time buyers,
yeah.
You know, and financing was done in-house, which means finance didn't go anywhere except for in the building where we made the offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would tell you that we literally were all set to close in 9 days.
Wow.
It just took the rest of the time just to get all the paperwork and everything else in order and actually set a date. But yeah, that's rare. That's simply just not going to happen that very often.
Mm-hmm.
So, if, you know, this is where, you know, I'm a naturally optimistic person, but let me tell you, at this particular point in time, I don't see it.
Yep.
I don't see it. It's going to get worse.
Yep.
Unemployment's going to continue to increase. I think we're going to see a pretty significant jump, you know, here over the next 6 weeks. I don't think they're going to be hiring as much for Christmas as they expected, although I've heard the numbers are pretty promising at this point from some of the retailers. You know, I just don't see it. With, you know, 8 million people, you know, unemployed now that were employed, you know, at this time last year,
mm-hmm.
you know, 8 million people is a lot of peoples.
And that's a lot of purchasing power.
Lots of purchasing power.
Yep.
You know, that's
sure,
going to have
to be,
an impact
you know.
On things.
Yes, it will.
You know, and what will happen is if we do not have a positive GDP in the third quarter, I think the commodity markets are simply just going to fall out through the bottom.
Really?
Because they're going to go, that there is no, in fact, green shoots. There is no... fact, United States recovery, that we're going into something deeper, and I think the commodities will fall right through the floor.
Huh. And in commodities, you're including gold and oil and all that?
You know, at this particular point in time, I think the reason gold is up is because there's, you know, instead of, you know, $300 billion worth of currency, there's $1.6 trillion worth of currency out there. And I think gold is just absolutely begging for the idea that the inflation is going to happen. But in fact, for the next 6 to 8 months, what we're going to have is a significant deflation. I think once people start really understanding that problem, I think gold's in trouble.
Hmm.
I think gold's up right now because everybody expects inflation to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think once they realize that inflation is not a problem right now, that we are going to continue to deal with deflation, that the United States economy is actually not double-dipping, but it's, you know, it was the pause before heading down the next flight of stairs,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That I think gold is going to, at best, stabilize, but probably, like every other commodity, fall through the floor.
Mm.
You know, if we have a 3 or 4% drop in GDP over the next three quarters, you know, that's a lot.
Oh, that's a, yes, it is.
You know, that's
well, and it certainly calls into question as to whether the rest of the world can withstand that also.
I don't think so.
Yep.
I don't, and China is in deep trouble as it is. You know, I think they've been hiding it for most of this year, hoping that things would improve and that they wouldn't have to really come out with it. But I don't think they, if we dip back down hard, I don't think they're going to be able to do anything about it. And if we have a bad Christmas, it's going to be really, really noticeable in China.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we get a ton of stuff out of there.
We have only about a minute or so left, but before that mm-hmm. ticks over, I want to bring up one more thing that I brought up. I've only got about 20 seconds to do it.
Cool. Do it.
Last week, we talked about little green footballs and the racism
yeah, Charles
and the white
Johnson,
supremacy
yeah.
stuff.
Yep.
I have come to a decision that the left has realized that racist is no longer has any juice, so now they're going to get to white supremacy, and that's all it is.
Hmm. Could very well be. Could very well be. I mean, the race card got worn out, so now they got to figure out another card.
Yep.
Yeah. That's going to be harder to stick.
Yeah.
All righty.
Give your shout-outs. We got 20 seconds.
All righty. Hey, Pammy, Arkansas Traveler. All of you folks that are listening, particularly our Tucson guy, Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Join us in the green room, people. See you later. Bill, have a week.
You too, Trace.
All right.
We off?
In the green room.
Okay. I'm really interested in your theory, Tracy, about a massive deflation in commodities going down, because I went through the 70s with Carter and all of that kind of stuff, and that obviously affected how I see things. And we seem to have the same kind of thing going on now. We're massively inflating the money supply, slightly different manner, but nevertheless still doing that. And what we got was big inflation numbers. So I'm really curious as to how we get from that scenario to the scenario today where you're positing a massive deflation. And I guess the other example then would be the deflation of the Depression.
Just for your information,
mm-hmm.
According to the switchboard, we are off.
Oh, good.
Off.
Off, off.
No green room off.
Really?
We're off, off.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, dang.
It doesn't show you at all. It doesn't even show me on there. It just dumped this completely off.
I'll be darned. I wonder if they got a complaint or something and to change things around. I mean, I don't know why they get a complaint.
Well,
folks were saying the things that they shouldn't have said in the green room.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, and then we can talk about whether we want to continue on that idea on an extended episode, elsewise.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal on monetary theory, okay? And it's taken them a while to bring me around to it.
Okay.
Because for the last 25 years, I've been a staunch monetary theory person.
Right.
Fundamentally, my economic viewpoint is based on monetary theory.
Yes.
I was a fairly early aware. The question I asked when I was in college, when I was an undergraduate in economics, and this was in the late 80s, the question I had, because we were talking about velocity, and that was an important issue in monetary theory,
mm-hmm.
of velocity. And I made a point in a discussion in international economics. I said, what is the impact of a second or third or fourth economy fundamentally based on the dollar, in which currency gets pulled out of the United States and is used in these other economies as a secondary currency, primary for most, general populace trading, what is the impact on velocity and our currency counts? Because as far as we're concerned, that currency is still out there and being circulated, but it's in fact outside of the United States circulation, which means that our velocity would actually appear higher because there would be less currency than we actually believe in the system.
Yeah, exactly.
And, they said, well, where do you think this currency is? I said, South and Central America. I mean, we're dumping $100 million a year into, South and Central America in drug trade money. That money is not coming back into the United States. That money is circulating in those countries. Some of it ends up back here, but a significant portion of it doesn't. It continues to circulate there. I said the impact on our velocity you're actually targeting, you know, an inflation rate and a velocity rate based on a supposition of the amount of currency that's in circulation. And in fact, that currency in circulation is actually off by 4 or 5 or even 7 or 8%,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you're looking at a velocity number that's running faster than you expect.
Yes.
Nobody would make that argument. Nobody was interested in following up on that, because the only way to really know exactly how much it was to actually try and estimate how much currency was actually in the drug trade going out of the country and staying out.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly somebody that,
yeah.
a set of principles that were interested in, advising us on how their currency flows were occurring.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was my question, and then when I realized that there was a, I recognized the securitization, Milken and junk bonds, and what, I made the argument, lots of people were making the argument, that it made the Fed's job harder because they had less control over the monetary supply, because securitization allowed for the creation of money without the creation of currency.
Yes.
And that's a
credit.
Point that I didn't think about. Okay? We were creating money, but not currency.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
in that situation, if we weren't getting hyperinflation, because let's face it, all through the 90s, the amount of securitization was going on was growing exponentially.
Yes.
If, in fact, we weren't dealing with significant inflation, the question was, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason was velocity was slowing down. Instead of 10, 11, 12, we were starting to run velocities 6, 7, 8. And, the reason we were running that low is because currency was not trading. It was the money that was being traded, the money that was being created by the debt instruments. And that wasn't being tracked. And it was absorbing a certain amount of potential inflation. But the question was, where the hell was the inflation going?
Mm-hmm.
Prices had to be going somewhere.
Yes,
all
it did.
The currency had to be going into something. Now, first was the tech bubble. Second was the real estate bubble.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact that was the case, I think what it was being absorbed into was, in fact, we have a third bubble that I don't think a whole lot of people paid attention to. We've had a tech bubble, and we've had a real estate bubble.
Yes.
Okay. I think we have a debt bubble.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
That's where the inflation, that's where the asset bubble has gone into, is that it's this money that we have created that is not tied to currency,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
has, in fact, absorbed itself. If we were to create currency for every one of those securitization, creation of money,
mm-hmm.
if we had to create the currency to go with it, mm-hmm. in other words, reverse the process. Instead of create currency and then that creates the money that circulates,
mm-hmm.
reverse
mm-hmm.
the process. Let's say the money gets created, through the securitization process. And because, they created $100 million worth of money, debt, securitized debt,
mm-hmm.
the Fed has to go, the Treasury has to go out and print another $10 billion worth of currency.
Mm-hmm.
If we had to reverse that process, where would we be right now with currency? Thinking back on $657 trillion worth of derivatives, where we would be is we'd be sitting on mountains of currency.
Mm, okay. Okay.
Mountains and mountains of currency.
Sure.
With, you know, a velocity of 2 or 3. You know, now create a situation where prices start to drop. And what you end up with is not only do you not have hyperinflation, you have no choice but to destroy currency. You have to destroy asset value, and the only thing that does that is deflation. You know, and imagine if we were sitting on, you know, $80 or $90 trillion worth of currency right now. Not only would we not be worrying about inflation, we'd be worrying about the fact that, you know, there would be an $80 billion hole that we're going to fall into called deflation, that we have to figure out some way how to absorb $80 trillion in currency.
Nah.
Well, the only way to do that is to drive prices right through the floor, everywhere, across the board. You know,
except for utility value. Utility value will increase.
Only after you get to the point where people start thinking that there's some bottom to it. You know, then we get back to the idea of, you know, and this was you and I, we and everyone else that had any half a brain, were talking about it last year. This is not a liquidity problem.
No.
Quit trying to produce money. This is not a liquidity problem. We're sitting on $80 trillion worth of currency. It's not a liquidity problem.
Right.
This is a solvency problem. We have no idea what these assets are worth. If we don't know what these assets are worth, you know, at some point, you're right, there's a utility. At some point, real estate has a value.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
well, productive real estate does.
Right. It has a value. This house has a value.
Right.
But in a free fall where you have, you know, where there's no semblance of, you know, stability in pricing, the question is where?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could see it dropping in that scenario. I could see the value of this house dropping down into the $30,000 or $40,000 range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I'm in Detroit, they're selling houses for $8,000.
Right. So we're talking about a 90% drop in asset value.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a 90% drop in asset value.
That still isn't enough.
Huh?
That still isn't enough. Not
yeah.
to take care of $50 to $60 trillion or better.
It is if you start considering that the entire world has to have that kind of asset drop.
Well,
and that
yeah.
means that there's nothing that won't be affected, including the currencies.
Hmm.
You know, including the commodities. There's nothing, you know, that you would be in, you know, everything would be in a situation where you would have to get down to utility value.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and, you know, imagine barrels of oil selling for $6 or $7 a barrel. You know, imagine real estate back in the, you know, where an average house in an average neighborhood in an average metropolitan market is $25,000 or $30,000, and the hot ones are in the 40s. You know, where you
mm-hmm.
get Southern California and Florida,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're selling for $35,000 or $40,000, and everyone else is at $25,000. You know, take our economy and take it from $15 trillion and drop it back down to 3.5 or 4, where it was 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know. 1985, 1983,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
wipe out $10 trillion of our GDP.
Mm.
You know, now, you know, a velocity of 6 or 7 and $10 trillion of GDP, that uses up $60 or $70 trillion
yep.
worth of currency.
Yep.
You know, but that kind of bottoming is, you know, that is depression level, you know, disaster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
You know, that means every single person in this country that is carrying debt, an asset debt.
Yes.
every single person that is carrying asset debt in this country is dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no. The holders of that debt are dead.
Right.
Yeah.
But initially they're going to try and get the asset holders to be the ones holding the bag.
Yeah, right. Good luck on that.
Right, because you're going to end up with people like me that sit here and go,
yep.
One, I don't need to be here.
I
need to be here more, I need to be here less than you need me to be here.
Exactly.
Yep. Because I'm not in a situation where, Victoria is 56 and can no longer work, and I'm 52 and have been unemployed for 2 years, and we're screwed.
Exactly.
We're not in that position.
Right.
We're in the position where over the next year, in that scenario, we're going to have RVs, boats, cars, snowmobiles that we're going to be able to sell at, $50 and $80, $100, for fees, because people are simply just going to be handing this stuff over to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing bankruptcies morning, noon, and night.
Oh, yeah.
Because deflation is simply going to wipe out everybody.
Hmm.
You'll be fine, although I don't, I'd be really, really worried about whatever asset, that you're sitting on to provide your future income.
Well, right now it's cash, but I'm sure looking for whatever it is that I need to be in to maximize the security of that. And I don't know, maybe cash is it.
I started looking at, large chunks of land that are, REO. I'm starting to look at Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to look for 100 to 500 acres, farmland that's, gone fallow because the bank has taken it and there's nobody running it. If I can pick up something like 500 acres for, in the neighborhood of $50 to $75 an acre, over the next 6 months, I'm going to seriously consider it. I don't care where it is. As long as it's...
Except that it's going to devalue also.
That's okay. At $50 to $75, an acre, I'm going to be pretty close to utility value.
That's true.
As long as I can buy it cash.
Right. Exactly.
Because under those circumstances, you can have subsistence farmers on that at that price and make it viable. It just needs to be in a relatively. It needs to be in a relatively good growing area.
Yeah.
In other words, it just has to be relatively decent farmland. It doesn't have to be, 80 bushels per acre farmland.
No, it doesn't. Nope.
I can tolerate 20 acres per bushel, farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Or 40 acres per barrel farmland. Per barrel, per acre.
Maybe that's it. Maybe food is it.
Yeah.
Or the ability to produce.
How much can you raise on 100 acres of, decent farmland, not great, excellent, massive farmland.
That's right.
But good farmland, how much can you raise on 100 acres?
Mm-hmm.
If you diversify the crop so that nothing has more than an acre or two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, fuck, you could raise a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It would be intensive, but how many people could you support on 100 acres in that situation, if you added chickens? Feed the chickens off the land.
How many can you support? Yep.
And I started looking at, what it would take to do those numbers. And I'm betting the number is probably going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 15. 15 to 16 people, 100 acres, and it would probably be pretty close to self-sufficient.
Actually, I'm given my age and abilities and that kind of stuff. I'd do something like that, but I'd sure crop it out. 10%.
Oh yeah, that's
10%
yeah.
of the crop. You get to keep everything else. I don't care how much you can produce on it. Just you go for it. And that provides me everything I need.
Right.
Pretty
so
much.
So I've started looking at, you know, over the next year, you know, my mortgage is $2,500 a month.
Ouch. Ouch.
You know, and I've got 9 months before we leave.
Mm-hmm.
That means I can put 20 grand into the bank. I can put 20
mm-hmm.
grand to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And to be perfectly honest, you know, at that point, I could probably double that by the fact that Victoria staying working, me working hard, and stuff like that. I could probably double that number.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Hmm. What happens with infrastructure? Infrastructure goes to hell.
Yeah, then you have what they're talking about in certain areas in Michigan.
What's going on there?
They're simply raising everything. You know, they're simply tearing the entire huge chunks of the towns and cities. They're just raising it and pulling the services all together.
Wow.
Nobody living there, no expenses,
mm-hmm.
no
mm-hmm.
maintenance.
Yep, yep.
You know?
Yep. Hmm. Well, you know, all of that talk makes me believe that I don't care how blatant they have to be at it, they are not going to report a third quarter negative GDP.
Here's my problem. I think somebody said, the problem for the people on the right, the problem is not that, Obama is narcissistic, is that he's being too uppity. And I'm sitting there going, well, that's the same claim as saying that, we're being racist.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to even take a bite on that one.
Right.
But think about, think about Bernanke and Geithner and Obama right now. The arrogance level that's going on there.
Oh yeah.
Think about Reid and Pelosi. Same thing. The arrogance level that's sitting there.
Right.
Think about the global warming people, cap and trade supporters and stuff like that. Think about the arrogance level in there. I don't think that they believe something like that could happen. Certainly not on their watch.
They can't be that ignorant. They can't.
Olympics? Reset button?
Well, Obama, yeah, but I mean Geithner, for all of his, his chicanery with his taxes and all that kind of stuff, he cannot be that ignorant. Bernanke can't be that ignorant.
Bernanke's mandate is to protect his banks, and the last thing in the world he ever wants his banks to be dealing with is inflation. Everything he's done, screams inflation.
Well, I don't disagree with that. All I'm saying is he cannot be so dumb that he doesn't understand what the flip side of that is. I mean, he can't be that ignorant.
I don't think they think it's that possible. I think that they think that the worst that could happen is 1981.
Oh, my God.
I think that they believe the worst that could happen is 1981, and I don't think that they think that that's that bad. But I don't think 1981 is the example.
Oh, I don't either.
I don't even think 73-75 is the example. You know, I think 37-38 is the example, you know, and for a man that spent his life analyzing the Depression, I think he's got it 180% wrong. And the wrong is exactly the same problem that I had. You and I, because you're a naturally a money person, you're monetary theory too.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever think about reversing the process and creating currency for all the money, the debt creation that was going on?
Nope.
When I started thinking about it like that.
Closest I ever came to that was when I first learned about two things, fractional banking. And how banks create money by lending it, taking that back as a deposit, or somebody taking that as money, depositing it, and then fractionally banking that again. That's as close as I got to that. But, I mean, good grief, we've been doing that forever.
Right, and you know, once I got past, you know, I understood securitization, understood it really, really well, and understood the issue of why the Fed was having such a problem with it. You know, the problem was I didn't think about, you know, what it meant for pure money theory. You know, and the problem is, you know, Friedman owns money theory, and he's gone.
Yeah, yes, he is.
You know, and nobody else has his, you know, stature that anybody is paying attention to. With him gone, you know, Geithner and Bernanke are Keynesians.
Oh yeah.
There's no doubt they're Keynesians. And, you know, the only one that anybody would have paid attention to is Friedman, and he's being, you know, maligned left, right, and center because, of course, now it's different. And you know what? The right in the sense that, you know, you can only apply money theory, you know, to the entire monetary base. And right now, that monetary base is $656 trillion.
Yeah, Jesus.
You know, and, you know, you sit there and, you know, that's fractional lending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I told you I can give you, you know, $1 million bank and you can loan out $1 trillion, you as a banker are kind of go, yeah, right. And they'd be taking me to jail if I tried to. But we've done it.
Yes, we have.
In spades. Yep. And that's when I started thinking about what would happen if you actually had to have, because I've been fighting the gold bug people. You know, the people that want to go back to the gold standard and the people that are really on deflation.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Reinholtz and, you know, Naked Capitalism, they're really, really big gold bugs. I mean, they really, really want to go back to the thing. And my problem with it is, and they've kind of acknowledged this, is if you go back to the gold standard today, you know, gold needs to be $7,000 or $8,000 an ounce.
Yeah, at least.
You know, which is of course why there's a certain number of gold bugs that, you know, are all over in gold, because it's got to go higher.
Oh yeah, right. It's got to get to that $7,000 or $8,000 an ounce. Yeah, right.
Right. But here's the other side about it. What happens if you had to have the currency to support that monetary base?
Oh Lord.
And when I went to that idea, forget the gold, you know, just go back to the idea of having currency to support at a normal velocity level the amount of, you know, actual value that's being traded out there. You know, then I started sitting on the idea, you know, that you needed, you know, tens of trillions of dollars worth of currency. And, you know, that's why inflation is not a danger, and deflation is a bigger danger, is because, you know, if you actually had to have the currency you know, we would literally be already awash in dollar bills. We would already be in a world of wheelbarrow bread.
Because
you would simply need to have that kind of currency to be able to make any kind of transaction. And in fact, you know, we only don't have it because we've securitized the debt. But if you're going to monetize the debt, which is what they're doing,
right,
then you need to have the currency. And if you're going to have the currency, well, then, you know, going from a $400 billion currency base to a $1.6 trillion currency base is only a good start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a whole big, long way to go before you even begin to get the problem of inflation. And, of course, that's not going to happen. We're not going to print $10 trillion worth of currency.
Nope.
Because not only will that debase the dollar, it will simply eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not going to do that, then the level of monetary activity has to decrease to that point, and the only way that's going to happen is deflation, and it has to be big deflation, and that means anything that's asset-wise has to come down. And anyways, so now you know why I've been depressed.
Hmm.
That's the worst case scenario, and frankly, you know, I'm trying to decide. Here's the thing. The worst case scenario, in my opinion, has to happen. Has to. In order for us to get past this, the worst case scenario has to happen. Okay? The question is, how long can Bernanke and Geithner and, you know, the financial system stop it from happening?
Well, okay, but wait a second. Play red team for a second. Assume collusion between all of the major economies of the world.
Yeah, I can't be the only one that's thought like this.
Yeah, I know. How would you work out of this situation? And again, you have to assume collusion between all of the major economic powers.
You have to do what you have to do, and what you have to do is you have to jump start a car, okay,
mm-hmm,
after it's gone over the cliff. And hope that you can get the engine running so that when wheels touch something again, you have some control over it.
Mm.
You know, I think what you need to do is you need to jumpstart our economy and get it moving again, okay, so that
mm-hmm
you establish some sort of base or foundation
mm-hmm
that's not real.
Mm-hmm,
not
mm-hmm,
real, but,
mm-hmm,
but you've got to get everyone to believe that it's real enough to get things moving again. And that, when you start thinking about the stimulus, you think about cash clunkers, you think about the $8,000, all of that is, in fact, doing just that. It's trying to create an artificial floor so
mm-hmm
that things can say, oh, we're okay now, here's
mm-hmm
the bottom, now we can start picking ourselves back up again. Now we can start actively, you know, trying to get the engine running again, because now we've hit the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an artificial bottom, and most everybody is looking at it going, yeah, but it's not a real bottom. I think what they're doing is they're trying to create a sufficiently believable bottom that everybody goes, well, okay, we're close enough to the bottom, and now we can start working our way back up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think this green shoot, that's what I think positive GDP is to say, see, we're near the bottom. Yeah, we might have a little bit more of a dip and stuff like that, but we're close enough to the bottom now that we can actually start, you know, resuming our normal activities. Banks, you can start lending again. You got plenty of currency, you got plenty of reserves. You can start lending again. You know, we can start getting, you know, businesses created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got all these, you know, dollars that are, the government's going to be spending over the next 18 months going forward from here, not from where, back there, but from here, it's going to continue. They're trying to jump start an economy in free fall. Cars already left the cliff, and they're still trying to jump start it. And if they can get the engine running, everybody goes, we got the engine running. If you can believe it.
Right.
And all you got to do is get everyone to believe that you believe it.
Yeah.
And in this case, all they need is about 8 people. Need the Fed, need the Treasury, need the European Bank, need the Japanese, and then you need to tell the Chinese to shut up and pay attention.
Well, it's in their best interest to shut up and pay attention.
Right.
Yeah.
And then,
until they get diversified out of the dollar enough, then they can say, yeah, right.
Once you can put a floor on things and start things coming back up again, then you can kind of, let things happen naturally. You haven't solved the problem.
No, sure haven't. I mean, that problem is still there, and so then it's just a question of, okay, which is the next bubble?
Right.
Asset bubbles are kind of the last, they're kind of the climax. Asset bubbles are the climax. I mean, after an asset bubble, what the hell do you go to? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the problem that Bernanke and Geithner and company have is, they want everything to start again, but everybody's going like, okay, we want to start too. Where?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they're hoping that if they can hold things together long enough, the where will make itself known, by the fact that somebody else has found it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the idea that they could jumpstart a green revolution and that, that would absorb, mega bucks before it failed. But in the meantime, we would create a green infrastructure, of epic proportions that by the time everyone realized that it wasn't going to do what everybody said it was going to do, we could, we could use up $10 or $15 trillion. Take 5 or 7 years, use $10 or $15 trillion. Get things going. That became my question: how long could you keep from actually? How long could you keep it going? How long
well,
can you keep
it's obviously a finite amount of time.
Yeah, but if they can keep it going long enough, to protect themselves, so that they can extricate themselves personally, them, their friends, their buddies, and stuff like that. If they can hold things together for another 8 to 10 years, they'll be able to extricate themselves and let somebody else deal with the next problem.
Well, that sure as hell doesn't help my brand new grandson.
No, but they've looked at Japan. Japan hasn't been able to keep it going for 20 years.
Well, at the cost of no growth, yeah.
Right, you've taken Japan.
If you say at the cost of no growth and their population has increased, that means that their standard of living has declined.
And by any stretch of the imagination, anybody would tell you that Japan is a fraction of what it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, this ain't good.
This is
not good. Maybe the answer is land. They ain't making any more of it. question is when to jump in and for how much and where.
Right. See, the problem is, you know, the next asset bubble is land. Okay. Here's the problem. It's already been a bubble. And its values have not crashed in relationship to the bubble. They've crashed in relationship to the bubble itself and to, you know, to the damage that they've wrought. But they haven't returned to a more stable value.
True.
And I think, you know, everybody and their brother-in-law is trying to make sure that doesn't happen, which is why the banks, you know, are letting the foreclosures happen the way they are, because that's the only way they can keep the value on the book the way they have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what if the asset is non-performing? This is something else I started thinking about. Okay. What investor would allow a bank to hold its asset, to hold an asset that's non-performing? What investor in their right mind would say to the bank, I've given you $100 million to invest in property. It's not performing. What the hell are you going to do about it?
Okay?
You and me go, there's not an investor in the world that would let the bank do that.
Nope.
What's the Fed rate right now? Functionally, what's the Fed rate?
Functionally?
Negative.
And
how many people are, and how has the bond market been selling over the last 6 weeks? They've been doing just great. Isn't that the same thing? Aren't people going, I want it safe. I don't care if it's a non-performing asset as long as it's safe.
I would want to know what the breakdown of those bond sales were. How much of that was bought by the Fed versus how much was bought by private individuals?
The number is actually pretty high.
Really?
Yeah, surprisingly high. Remember, reading some of the stories, demand has been, given the interest rates, surprisingly high. You know, so the question is, you know, what investor would go to a bank and say, you know, I don't care about, you know, the assets as long as they're strong. I don't care if they're non-performing. The answer is a whole fucking lot of people.
Apparently.
As long as they don't lose their $100 million, they don't care if it's not earning them anything.
Capital preservation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bank, forecloses on the property, no mark to market. You know, they just hold it on the books as the real estate is, you know, $400,000. That's what we got the property on there as a loan, $400,000. It's on the books, $400,000, until it's sold. You know, they don't have to change anything. They just show it as a non-performing loan.
Yeah, ORE.
You know, and so the question becomes how long can the banks keep that up?
Well, actually, they can keep that up as long as the Fed lets them.
And right now, the Fed is more than happy to let them.
You betcha. I mean, it used to be we were encouraged mightily to get the hell rid of our OREs. Now I think that's not so true.
Right. If the first rule at this point is capital preservation, then the last thing they want to do is get it off the books, because at that point they have to mark the market.
Right. Exactly.
And
they have to recognize
the loss,
and that's a capital hit. Yeah.
You know, and that's what Geithner and Bernanke are trying to prevent. You know,
at some point in time they get overrun by events.
If they can slow the process down and let the stuff trickle out, you know, all they need to do is have the housing market stabilize and people start buying. They don't have to buy much. They just have to be buying.
And I don't know that I agree with that, Tracy. I mean, because we really have not talked about commercial real estate.
I think that shoe is
about to hit.
Yeah.
When you combine the current real estate mortgage market with the commercial real estate market, at some point in time, banks do not have an ability to continue to carry them simply on an income basis. And you know what? I'm going to have to go back into the FDIC thing and start checking out some of the bigger banks, because I am not seeing any numbers on commercial real estate at this point. And you will note that there are no news stories about them.
Yeah, other than the anecdotal ones that we're seeing, you know, for you guys are, you know, but we're seeing it here too, you know, strip
mm-hmm.
mall after strip mall after strip mall after strip mall abandoned.
Closing down, yeah, right, shuttered up. Yep.
Now, I said, you know, how long can it go on? And the answer
mm-hmm.
is, you know, if they have the right people in place, they can probably keep it going for a long time. But it has to happen. The worst case scenario has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I started thinking about, you know, okay, I'm safe from the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my lifestyle, my situation is relatively safe from the worst case scenario. I'm going to be one of the lucky ones. You know, I don't have a reliance on a pension plan with a company that's going to go broke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, you know, $1 million annuity, at a company that was rated AAA that is in fact, you know, C-.
Bankrupt. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You know, I'm kind of in the situation where, you know, my only asset that I have to worry about
mm-hmm.
is an asset that I can sit in and, in fact, take advantage of for the next year
mm-hmm.
basically for free.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so, you know, somebody just handed me $250,000 to put in the bank and I don't have to answer for it at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the meantime, I can, quote, put $2,500, you know, that I'm going to earn an interest,
mm-hmm.
you know, off
yep.
to the side for me.
Yep.
You know, on an economic point, you know, from a business point, from an economic point, you know, not paying the mortgage here,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a slam dunk.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know. The only question is, you know, can Geithner and Company actually hold things together for the next 5, 8, 10 years?
Hard to see how they do. Well, first off, they aren't going to be around. Somebody else is going to inherit that mess.
Yeah, the question is, will it be 4 years from now or 8 years from now?
Yeah, exactly. So short run, 3 years unless they leave. If they leave, I think that's pretty telling. It means they gave up the ghost of a chance of being able to control it. I don't know who else they bring in that would have a chance to do that. I time, yeah, I mean, you know, you start running through the names, and it's like, well, no, they probably wouldn't take the job, and they probably aren't up to the job.
Hang on a second.
Yeah. We're probably about to get kicked off here anyway.
Something hit the window a few minutes ago, and then hit the patio window.
Oh, yeah?
And it's got the cat and the dog very interested.
Oh-ho!
And their interest has been persistent.
Huh.
So
you got a critter out there?
Huh?
You got a critter out there?
Well, I would make that assumption.
Yeah, right.
But only
did something hit the window?
I wonder if it was maybe an owl or something. I just assumed that it was a big gust of wind.
Ah.
Popped things a little bit.
Yeah.
But it also could have been a bat.
Yeah. Yep. Or an owl.
No. We've got three huge barn owls here.
Oh, yeah?
Dude. Yeah. I mean, you know, 18, 20, 22 inches, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, well, they would have rattled your window.
And they would have come through the window.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, so those were all my contemplations, and so that's when I started today, when I had some time, I started doing some research on land, and I want to start looking at some ideas as far as, how much land is necessary.
Well, and that's going to depend on whether you have water or not.
Well, the side token is, I can't run it myself at that size.
Right, exactly.
So where's the balance between the number of people that it can support and at the same time need to have functioning? There's got to be a balance there, and I don't know what it is.
And I don't either. Heretofore it's always been, I can do what I need to do on land, but that's obviously getting in to be an outdated notion. That's something that needs to be looked at. How much ground, to how many people, under what kind of circumstances?
Put the idea of use the same percentages. Depression level unemployment, would be, somewhere in the vicinity of 45 million unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
We're at about 18 right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you take in consideration all the numbers.
So we're about 40% there, roughly.
But that means you can double what we've got now.
And be almost there.
How bad is it in that situation?
Well, pretty damn bad.
Because at the time of the Depression... people that, we were still, yes, we had become an industrialized nation, but we were still, 40% agrarian?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
40-45% agrarian at that point?
Mm-hmm.
That meant a significant part of the population just hunkered down on their farms and, continued to provide for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we're at 85, 90% industrialized, non-agrarian.
Mm-hmm. At least.
You know, that's a whole shitload of people starving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
Well, at that point you start looking at federal intervention in basically grabbing crops like communist Russia and China did. Basically saying, yep, thank you very much for raising that. We'll take that now.
Yeah, here's where, 35 million conservatives will go, yeah, over my fucking dead body.
Exactly.
No, over your fucking dead body.
That's right. Bring lots of body bags, folks. Yes, indeed.
The right kind of people are conservative in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't expect that to be an issue. I got into a Twitter conversation with somebody yesterday, and they wanted to just harp on this, privacy issue with wireless tapping and lost the First Amendment.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I absolutely call them on it. And I finally got the two people that were in there to finally go, if a little dictatorship, gets us, single payer health care, we're all for it. And I said, of course you are. So why the fuck are you worried about a little bit of privacy? Funny, the conversation ended right there.
Yeah, I guess it did. Oh, Lord. God, be careful what you wish for, folks. You might get it.
Yeah. I don't want to believe that this kind of scenario can play out. And I also don't want to believe that I'm the only idiot that's thought of it.
Oh no, I don't think you're the only person that's thought of it. But
and I also don't want to believe that it necessarily has to be so pessimistic. It's the pieces that I'm reading from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Reinholtz is not talking about, he talks about deflation and, he's talking about, prices dropping at, 1 or 2% a year, 3% a year under bad years. My worst case scenario is 10-15%.
Mm-hmm.
He would say, well, that's just structurally not possible. But I don't see any reason why, if it can go down 3, why it can't go down 10.
Exactly.
And
it would be interesting to see why he would believe that that isn't structurally possible. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with him. I'm just saying I would sure as hell like to know his thought process.
Well, I don't think I haven't seen him even address the issue.
Oh.
Because he's thinking that 2 or 3%, deflation is horrific. It's terrible. It's nightmarish.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking, God, I hope it's only that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And reading some of the stuff, on Naked Capitalism, I'm sitting there like going, they're talking about, losses in the financial system and what's going on with the dollar and, carry trades, and I'm sitting there like going, you're looking at this as 1981,
mm-hmm.
maybe 73-75.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm seeing from these people. Is they think it's really bad, 1981, 73-75. I'm sitting there like going, nobody believes that 37-38 can happen again. Oh, no, it's just not structurally possible for that to happen.
Hmm.
And I'm just thinking, if that type of situation happens, our ladder is considerably taller than it was in 1937-38.
Oh, yeah.
We're a lot higher up.
Yes, we are.
On that ladder
mm-hmm.
than way back then. And
yep. Well, and we have a populace that is not prepared to deal with it in any fashion.
Economically, culturally, fiscally, politically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Illiterate.
Absolutely. You know, that fascinates me. I'm going to have...